Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, Sugitana. Okay, so let's start with this. What's your name?
Q-tip.
Where are you going? Who are you going with?
Left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. I gotta get it.
Hey everybody, welcome to Drive Through HR. Ryan, William, and Nisha coming to you live every day talking about human resources. Well, let's definitely get to our guest as quickly as possible. Be a great conversation. Rev, welcome to Drive Through HR.
Well, I'm grateful to be here and honored to be talking to you guys, Brian.
Well, it is good to have you. We're going to have a good conversation. So if you would, introduce yourself to our family of listeners, and then we'll jump into our big question.
Yeah, well, my name is Rebel Brown, as you know. I am focused on bringing the power of neuroscience and the technology of our minds to businesses to fuel and compel next-generation performance, both at the business level, from a profitability and performance standpoint, at the individual employee level, at the team level, leadership level, sales. Basically, my goal is to have organizations understand how the technology of our mind and how we really tick as human beings, how to apply that to take our whole way of being, thinking, and doing to a whole new level of performance. And I do that as a coach, I do that as a consultant, and I do that as a speaker. I got into this after 25 years as a executive strategic consultant in large corporations, high technology, biotech, et cetera. And I got into it because what I saw was people making poor decisions over and over again. And what I finally realized was it wasn't that they were making bad decisions, it's that they couldn't see any other decisions because of their minds. And I got fascinated with what I call our mindware and the software programs that literally drive our unconscious mind to control 95% of our thoughts and our behaviors without us even knowing about it. And so my mission today is to help people understand neuroscience and how to apply it so that we can take back that 95% and start to really control what we do and where we go to bring out our ultimate performance and potential. Does that get it going?
Yeah, that definitely rocked us on out. So take us into your world, and let's go a little bit deeper in kind of what keeps you up at night and what's top of mind this morning.
Yeah, well, you know, I cut my teeth as a sales rep in high tech, and then I moved into, I did over 20 years of consulting with businesses. I started out working with early stage startups, you know, baby companies in a garage, five guys in a garage. Then I moved into growth companies. Then, you know, the last 10 years I did a lot of turnaround work. And, you know, what I saw, Brian, everywhere was I would walk into a company, the venture capitalist or the board of directors or the CEO would hire me to come into a company, and I would, you know, take a look at what they had, and I'd see opportunities, I'd see things that were broken, or I'd see things that were like, why haven't we done something with this? Here's a really great idea. And the people in the organization couldn't see it. And so I got fascinated with why can't people see what's right in front of their face? And then I'd get into the organization a little deeper, and I'd chat with employees, and I'd find out that, you know, there were jewels of wisdom, jewels of opportunity, jewels of potential, jewels of skill sets in the organization that nobody could see how to reorganize them. And what that led me to do was to really say, okay, so why do we as humans get, you know, why do we go to motivate somebody and all of us, you know, we have a conversation with someone, give them a huge opportunity or use a big stick to say, you know, you need to step up and nothing happens? You know, why do we think we motivate people and it doesn't happen? Why do we have communications in a team that everybody walks away and we think everybody's on board and then 2 weeks later we have as many different perceptions as there were people in the meetings? Why do we have all this? And I got fascinated by that. And that's why I got into neuroscience, because what neuroscience is now learning is that most of what we have been taught about how our humans' minds work, what makes us work as humans, how we tick, how we process information, what motivates us, how we communicate, et cetera, most of what we've all been taught is inaccurate, highly inaccurate. And so what keeps me, you know, what keeps me going is there is so much power. The more we are humans in business, we're humans in everything we do. And the mindware, which is what I call the soft, the programs that drive our behaviors and our thinking processes, that mindware is defined on, in each one of us as on a human basis, and then we bring that into the business. So the more we can understand how our minds are designed to function, and by the way, each of us has a unique mind design, the more we can understand how each individual is designed, the better we can become as being leaders, as communicators, as collaborators, in working with our customers, our prospects, our partners. Basically, who wouldn't like to be able to better communicate, motivate, inspire, and understand the individuals around them so that they actually get much better results? I mean, that's something we're all seeking. And it turns out neuroscience has given those answers, and yet we really don't, we aren't applying them into businesses yet. So that's kind of where I go.
Where does social media, or does it throw a big curveball in, like the what you're talking about, what you just described, kind of the future of everything that you think and use? Are we getting rewired? I mean, I got a lot of questions coming at you there, but.
Well, you know, that's a pretty broad question there, Brian. Here's an interesting thing to note about social media. All right. Social media is heavily reliant on words, right? Like Twitter, for example, with 140 characters. Blogs that are all written word. Pretty much a lot of it is written, and one of the things that we've learned is that the actual communication between humans is reliant, less than 10% of the communication comes from words. It actually comes, the communication happens based on much more on sight, sound, feeling that happens in the personal level. Actually, over 90% of the communication comes from our physical bodies and our voices. And when you take that communication and those triggers and those filters out of the communication, such as what you have with social media, you're only getting 10% of the data you need to have a complete communication, which is why I think social media is dangerous, because you actually don't get all of the data and information you need to make a rational, conscious decision about the communication. You only get the words, and they get filtered through your own programs. So it's really not a valid communication and statement, which, by the way, I believe is why you see a lot of people on social media who are out there who can present themselves as gurus, as experts, whatever, and people follow them, and you never even know they've never even had any – they don't have a clue about what they're talking about, right? Because we don't have the filters to be able to know that oh my, this isn't right. This person doesn't really have this. Or we have people that read something on social media and take it one way. Somebody else reads it another way, just like emails in an organization, and we have collisions. It's because we're not getting all the information we need to communicate based on how our minds actually process the communication. So, yes, we do get programmed, but we get programmed in ways we never even assumed. If we don't get all the communication data points that we need, we read something and we imprint it and say, oh, that must be truth. But what we read was read based on our own filters. We swung it into our own perspective. We imprinted it over time as truth, and it may not even be what was said in the first place.
Well, this is such an interesting perspective, Ribal, and that's what is happening in most of the organization because, you know, the chain of communication as we talk and the end level person and the information that he perceives would be, I would say, probably 20% of it. So when it comes to communication and when it comes to leadership, to your point, as you said, a leader has to be efficient in order to motivate, inspire, or understand, or even listen to their followers. Communication is the key, right? So what do you advise to those leaders in order to become a better communicator?
Well, it's not just about being a better communicator. You know, that's one of the things we have is, well, if a leader's a better communicator, then everybody's going to be good. here's the reality about communication. Every single human being on the planet has a different mode for communication.
Yeah.
They have a different mode for the way they process the data. They have a different set of filters that have been created through their experiences in their lives. They have a different, there's things called chunk sizes and chunking styles. I mean, there's a whole matrix of communication of how our minds process the information that comes into us, and no two of us are the same, which is why as leaders, it's not as much about you becoming a better communicator. It's about a leader having the tools to be able to understand every person that they need to communicate, what is their unique style and what do I have to do for them? What do I have to do for Sally versus what do I have to do for Bob to be able to, A, clearly communicate, B, drive them to bring them into a decision, C, motivate and inspire them, D, have them collaborate better in a team, and E, give them the environment they need to produce their best possible work, right? There is no one-size-fits-all communication parameter anymore because we now know that our minds don't work that way. So as leaders, we need to shift from, well, I'll just communicate more clearly and then they'll all understand, to, okay, so what do I know about each of the people in my team and how do I need to adapt my styles, my words, what I say, how I say it, the content, et cetera, so that I'm sure that the entire team heard what I needed them to hear and walked away with the best results, which is why, you know, I wrote a book called The Influential Leader, which has a lot of this content in it and how to work on it, and I'm currently working. I have an assessment that's actually a mind design assessment that's 13 simple questions that you can have an employee or anybody in an organization take. It'll give you back a report of the parameters of their mind design and then literally tell you what you need to do to communicate, lead, motivate, and slot them into their best possible position in the organization. And I'm working with some HR organizations to actually beta test that and bring that into reality so that we can start using those kind of tools in our organizations.
That's wonderful. Well, talking about assessment, when we talk, selecting the people or the top talent for the leadership role, we always do this assessment, right? Leadership assessment programs. So do you think organizations should look at more about neuroscience and take that as a practice to their leadership assessment program?
Absolutely. That's what most of the – I'll give you an example. Well, most of the leadership programs and the things that we use are based on what we assume to be true about how our minds work from a century ago. That's what most of it's based on. And, yes, it's been improved and enhanced. But most of it's based on presumptions and assumptions about how our minds work that neuroscience has now proven is inaccurate. I'll give you an example. 95% of everything we do and think is controlled by our unconscious mind and the mindware programs we have, and we don't even know it happens. It's before it becomes conscious. In fact, our unconscious mind, we take in 11 million bits of data every second. Our unconscious mind filters that data to pick 126 bits a second. 126 bits. That's like taking one package of toothpicks a pile of toothpicks packages 2 miles high. We pick one package, and that's what represents to our conscious mind is truth. What that tells me is that our unconscious minds are in control, and as leaders, we need to be more worried about testing how we understand the unconscious mind of the individual in front of us and how we learn how to lead, motivate, communicate with them based on their own programs, rather than coming up with a test that basically assumes everybody fits into four slots or five slots. So, for example, with my assessment, I can tell, you know, I can ask somebody a simple question, and based on their response, I can tell you whether they're going to be better off working in customer service in a proactive manner or whether they're, you know, where they're actually listening and filtering based on the needs of others and what others are doing, or whether they're better off being placed in a role in the organization where they drive standards throughout the organization because they're totally motivated by what their role is and what they've been told, and they aren't going to let other people sway them. That's just one aspect. Right, and we have no ability out there right now to be able to tell how people's minds are designed, and yet neuroscience has given us the keys to everything. and we're stuck, as with what I saw with my clients, right? We're stuck in the way we've always done it because these tests are what we've always used. We've always looked at humans in the way we've looked at them. And we need to, you know, we have the opportunity now to learn how, the reality about how we tick, how we think, and to apply these amazing scientific discoveries. And I'm not talking about the reptilian brain and what triggers fear. I'm talking about fundamental infrastructure programs in our mind that run our daily lives, and we don't even know they're there. And yet they influence. I'll give you another example, Nisha. Some of us are motivated toward things. We will be motivated by being given something to go toward. Some of us are motivated only by being given something to move away from. There's a toward and away filter. If you're a leader and you have a let's say you have somebody that's having a performance problem, and you go to have a conversation with them about, well, you know, we really need to step this up or you're going to lose your job. That's an away from motivation, right? If the person you're talking to is toward motivated, the idea of losing their job won't even trigger them to be motivated because it doesn't match their mindware filters. What you need to do instead with that person is say, you know what, to keep your, you know, this, you need to give them a carrot and a goal, a toward, for them to change their behavior. If you give them away, it's like you never even talk to them at all. And we've all seen that. We've had conversations with people and given them, well, here's this great opportunity for you, and it's like they weren't even excited. Or we've given them the stick, you're going to lose your job, and nothing changes in the motivation. It's because we use the wrong filter. There's so many parameters that are like that that we've learned now thanks to neuroscience. And we have the tools, and it's just a matter of being able to embrace them in the organizations. Which is why, you know, I've always been an executive strategy consultant, product strategy, market and sales strategy. And, you know, all of a sudden I realized that all of the external processes and how we do that and, you know, everything doesn't have a lot to do with performance and productivity if we aren't motivating both our internal resources and our employees, as well as our buyers, prospects, partners, et cetera, externally, using the right tools and the right processes, communication, et cetera, that matches the way their mind works.
Well, that's such interesting stuff. And how would an HR team, you got an HR practitioner, and they want to help their team kind of better, kind of level set and better understand how to work with each other. Don't have a budget for assessments, and so they've literally just got to kind of do the research and start a program to better communicate using some of the tenets of what you're speaking to. How do they get started with that?
Well, I think the first thing you have to do is we all need to pay attention to neuroscience and its applications in business. And as I said, that's one of the reasons I wrote The Influential Leader, which is a really, you know, the people that have read it look at me and go, it's a pocket guide to your mind. It's simply there are so many resources out there available from neuroscience, research studies, et cetera, that point the way to what does drive us. And so I took all of the research and I basically created this simple little book that has 20 different programs that we use that drive us, and what the program is, what it results in the organization, and how we can lead away from it to be able to expand our innovation opportunities, to move beyond what we know, to better motivate, better communicate, et cetera. And that's exactly the way HR professionals can get started, is just go find that information and apply it, because it is out there. I mean, my book's $4.99. I'm not pushing the book, but I'm just saying it doesn't take thousands of dollars to be able to do this. But we have to start, we need to start realizing the biggest barrier I see, Brian, is that we all assume that the way we've always done it and thought about it with our minds is the way it is, and that's not true, and science has now proven that. Science has now proven that the leadership, you know, the carrot and the stick is actually not even a good metaphor, because as soon as we use a stick, we put people into threat mode, and that does nothing but trigger survival mind, and that does nothing but then put them into the status quo bias, and they will hunker down and do things the way they've always done it and literally stop hearing anything new you recommend as soon as they're in a threat mode. there's so many different parameters, and we just need to wake up and realize that what we're doing isn't working as well as it could if we understood the reality of the human mind.
Explain status quo bias.
Okay, so status quo bias is, okay, so let's back up a minute. So think of your mind as a computer, all right? Think of the brain as the hardware, and then you have software that runs the hardware, which is what I call mindware. You have conscious programs that you've developed and created over time, which are things like analysis, reasoning, math, language, etc. You have unconscious programs, which are many of them are learned, and they're learned by our experiences through life. We have instincts that are part of that unconscious mindware, and then we have metaprograms, which are the infrastructure that tends to guide how we process. The status quo bias is an instinctual process, that is an instinctual program in our unconscious that has now been documented by studies at Harvard, MIT, et cetera. And what it basically says that any time you have a person, a group, an organization, whatever, let's just take an individual mind. Anytime you have a situation where an individual mind sees a delta in what it was expecting versus what is actually happening, or sees a threat, a delta is viewed as a threat. Anytime that mind sees a threat, it automatically triggers a chemical that then triggers an instinctual response called status quo bias, which drives us to return to what is safe and known and comfortable, which is the status quo way we've always done it. And by the way, that whole mechanism I just described is the reason organizations push against change so much, because our unconscious minds create a pattern of behavior, of information, of thinking, of process, of what is expected based on our experiences and what we know. So, for example, I'm in a role in an organization, and I do things a certain way, and I follow a certain process, and that's my role. Now the organization says, well, we're going to change and we're going to do things differently. And now what I have in the unconscious mind is a presentation of a different environment or situation than what is expected, a.k.a. what I've always done. The chemical reaction happens. There is no conscious filtering. Well, this really isn't a threat. There is no conscious filtering. The unconscious chemical reaction happens because there's a delta between the expectation and the reality. Status quo bias begins, and automatically, as an employee, I start to resist the change and start to want to hang on to my role the way it's always been. That is status quo bias in action. It happens in business strategy. It happens in product strategy. It happens in sales processes, marketing processes, you know, anywhere in an organization. We go to status quo bias, and we repeat and repeat, and that's why we get stuck. And it's why we resist any kind of movement and change. If you understand how the human mind works, there are ways that you can actually introduce change into an organization or into a process or a sales program or whatever, so that the status quo bias chemical is never released and you never trigger the threat. But the traditional way we've all been taught to introduce change does nothing but trigger that threat response, and that's why we have so much resistance.
So I want to give you two words and get your thoughts, definition of those two words.
Okay.
First word is innovation. Second word is trust.
Uh-huh. Now let me see. So innovation,
mm-hmm,
and trust.
Yep.
Okay. So innovation to me is being able to release the mind filters and the design filters that force us to continue to repeat the same thing, see the same data, not see the new trends and opportunities. Innovation is stepping beyond those programs and being able to release them so that you can now see a 360-degree view of opportunities, differences, changes. Okay? Does that make sense? Because here's what happens, Brian. Once we see something or experience something 2 to 3 times, it becomes a patterned way of seeing, thinking, doing, and our unconscious minds literally don't re-sample the data, the experience. They assume it's the same until we get to such a big delta in the reality versus what the expectation is that we actually go resample the data. That's why companies don't see new opportunities that are right in front of them, new product opportunities, opportunities to evolve and adapt, because the unconscious mind is literally seeing what it expected to see. Once you move beyond that pre-patterned, this is what I expect, this is what I expect, this is what I know to be true, this is, you know, the, I call them corporate legends. Well, I know this is why my customers buy my product. I know this is my best product line. I know this is how I inspire these people, right? Once you step out of those knowns and into a new mind where the unconscious is sampling everything again, you see all the new opportunities and you see all the new ways to innovate and to be different and unique. We are actually learning machines, and the fact that we learn the way we do is what keeps us stuck in what we know. So that's my definition of innovation. It's lifting out all of those knowns, all of the legends that we believe to be true, and actually seeing what's right in front of us with fresh perspective. Because once we do that, our minds will create. We will innovate. We just have to get out of the programming that keeps us from even seeing those fresh perspectives. Now, trust, you know, trust is an interesting thing to me because trust is actually an unconscious response from our unconscious mind, all right? We've all walked into meetings or into a party or an event and met somebody that it was like, you know, we met somebody new, and before we knew it, it was like we've known them forever, right? Have you ever had that experience?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And then we've had the experience where we walked into a meeting and it was like pulling teeth to get a grunt out of the other side. There was no connection. There was no trust. And you're like, what did I do? Right? What is going on here? That is all an unconscious response because our unconscious minds are looking at the person across from us who is communicating or people, and we're looking for similarities. When you have similarities across the when you have a similarity between two humans, and by the way, it's not necessarily your background. It's more physical and verbal. It's more how do you stand, how do your what are your gestures like, what do you literally in your body language tell this other human, and what is your voice, your style of speaking, the amount of words you use, etc. Does that mirror and match into them? And if it does, you will create instantaneous rapport or unconscious trust. If it doesn't match, the unconscious mind will shut down and begin to say, no, not like me. And that comes all the way back from cave time, from when cavemen, how did they tell if somebody coming at them across the prairie was friend or foe? They looked for similar kind of movements as the clan they were in, and they heard similar kind of vocalizations, and that's how they knew it was friend or foe. And we still have that wired into our unconscious mind. Now, imagine being able to know how to create that level of rapport or trust with everyone you meet within 5 minutes. That's what we can learn. I have a program I do nothing but to teach those kinds of skills to anybody that's customer-facing, anybody that's prospect-facing, and then I also have a program for internal for organizations. That, to me, and that's what trust is about. Without having that initial unconscious trust, you don't build the rest of the trust.
Right.
No, that's a good, yeah, no, and that's a good, just excellent perspective. So we've got a minute and 30 seconds left, and I don't want to shortchange you on where can people track you down if they have questions, if they want to connect with you, let us know how that can happen.
I am, you know what, I'm at rebelbrown.com, and off of that website you can find contact information for me. You can find my blog, which is, you know, weekly I do something about neuroscience applied to business. You can find my books. You can find my articles, my e-books. You can find a sample assessment for your mind design.
All on the website. Folks, that is so easy. There's just no reason that you shouldn't go do it this afternoon. It just makes total sense to me. So don't get stuck in the status quo of not doing it. So... well, perfect, Rebel. Absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Great conversation. Learned a ton, which piqued my interest in a couple areas. And we'll have to have you back. How about that?
I would love to do that, Brian. That would be awesome. I'd love to talk to you more about these assessments that we're doing because they're not high cost. and what we learn. You know, I'd love to just talk more about the specifics of what we can learn about mind designs and how they apply to people in our organizations, as teams, leaders, et cetera, because it's fascinating. The more we learn, the more fascinating it becomes.
Perfect. Well, we will definitely get that done. Folks, we're out of here for the day.
It might seem crazy.